Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here, The Tom Woods Show.
My new book, Diary of a Psychosis, is out. It's the most lively, devastating baseball bat to the throat takedown of what the public health establishment did in 2020 and beyond that you can imagine. It's my first book in 9 years, and you're going to love it. Check it out at diaryofcovid.com. And if you've already bought it, make sure also to visit diaryofcovid.com so you can claim your free bonuses, including my free companion volume, Collateral Damage, a collection of stories from real people who suffered under the restrictions. They weren't allowed to tell their stories at the time, but every one of them told me, "We just want to be heard." Check it all out at diaryofcovid.com. Hey, everybody, Tom Woods here. I'm delighted to welcome Jennifer Say back for episode 2471 of The Tom Woods Show. We're going to talk about her background in just a minute, so I don't want to sort of spoil it by giving her the usual introduction I would ordinarily give. I will say you may remember her from a previous episode of this show when we talked about the controversy that surrounded her when she was at a certain brand we'll get into, because she spoke her mind about COVID and school closings and things that I think a lot of people more or less secretly admit she was right about now, but at that time, she didn't have that kind of luxury. And she's got a really, really interesting and exciting announcement to make today. So Jennifer, with that extremely mysterious introduction, welcome back.
Thanks for having me. I think you may have been on twice.
And yeah, I think you were on twice.
Yeah, I think you've had me twice.
Just going over, because did we talk about your documentary in one of them?
That was the second one. I'm making a documentary film, and we're in post-production now on the harms to children from the prolonged school closures.
Good. Okay. All right. Excellent. Okay. So now we're going to peel back the layers of the onion as to who Jennifer Say is. So let's start off. I do want to talk a bit about your background, because you have quite an interesting background. You first came into, I guess, the public eye by virtue of being an elite athlete. So situate us there.
Sure. Yeah, I had a very unusual childhood. I was an elite gymnast in the 1980s. I'm old. It was a long time ago. I was a 7-time national team member and the 1986 national champion. And it was a brutal sport, brutal training environment. And despite my successes, and I mean, when I say the training environment was brutal, harsh, abusive, I trained on a broken ankle for 2 years, which my coaches basically forced me to. We were on a forced starvation diet. My weight was announced on a loudspeaker at the gym, and I was I gained a quarter of a pound. I mean, this is what it was like. And despite my successes, when I walked away from the sport, I felt like a failure. And I really suffered the repercussions of that kind of treatment. You know, when you treat a child like that, when you tell a child that she's garbage, she's going to start to believe that about herself eventually. And so I really wrestled with that for about 20 years, honestly, after leaving the sport. And despite the fact that I got married, had 2 children, had a really good job, I just had a lot of anxiety and, you know, low self-esteem and all of these things. So at about 40 years old, I sat down and I tried to make sense of it. And I wrote a book called Chalked Up. And that was the first book, the first first-person account of the abusive coaching practices in the sport. Now, this was before Larry Nassar. This was before all that came into the public's attention. And I was just demonized and just dragged across the internet by the gymnastics community and the Olympic community, calling me a liar. I mean, this is before Me Too, Tom. So you weren't allowed to say this coach was an abuser. This coach was a rapist. This coach, the national team coach of Team USA Gymnastics, was a pedophile. We all knew it. And we were told, don't say anything. Just stay away from him. He's a well-respected coach. You just need to fall in line. And we all did it. But I wrote about it in a book in 2008. And that was a very harrowing experience for me, because everybody just called me a liar and a grifter. That was the first time they called me a liar and a grifter. And then, of course, as everyone now knows, Larry Nassar happened in 2016, 17, and 18. He went to prison for life. For those that don't know, he was the team, quote unquote, doctor for Team USA Gymnastics. And he sexually assaulted over 500 young athletes under the guise of medical treatment. So that just kind of brought the toxic culture out into the open. And suddenly everybody agreed with me. But it really cemented for me that if you speak the truth, it will out in the end. And it can be very difficult to go first and do that. And you will suffer the slings and arrows, but it's important because eventually people will stand with you. And in that process, we, as everybody, you know, gathered their courage and became willing to speak out, then they demanded change. And so now the coaching culture is not perfect, but it is getting better. And girls will be protected. So it's important to stand up and say true things, even when they are inconvenient truths at first.
Man, you are no stranger, not only to controversy, but having people angry at you. I mean, I don't know what you're made of, but that would grind anybody down.
Well, you know, I don't know what I am either, because I'm a very like nice and obedient person by nature. Obedient might be the wrong word at this point, but certainly as a child, if you grow up in that training environment, you are to be seen and not heard. So this goes against my nature, but I also can't stand to see children being harmed, and truth matters. We can't live in lies. Terrible things happen when you accept a lie and you will, and when you are willing to stay silent in the face of lies. So I just sort of steel myself. But it was a good lesson that first time, because I learned that truth outs in the end. And if you just stay strong, people will join you eventually. It just takes a while.
So once you exited, once that part of your life, that chapter of your life closed, what was the next big chapter?
Well, I went off to college and I was a total mess, you know, because I had come out of this totally awful environment. But I did well in school and I ended up going to work like a normal person. This is in the early 90s. And by 1999, I got a job at Levi's, which was such an honor. I had loved and worn the brand since I was a very young child. When I traveled to Moscow in 1986 for the first ever Goodwill Games, I brought 10 pairs of 501s to trade with Russian gymnasts. Like, this was a brand that had real meaning in my life. So it was an honor to get to work there and to start as an entry-level marketing assistant and work my way up. And by 2008, when I wrote my book, I was a vice president in marketing, and I ended up working there for 23 years. I was the chief marketing officer for 8 of them, which is a really long tenure for a CMO, and I was the brand president for 2.
And now, we've already talked about some of the controversy that you wound up facing there. I mean, and it's not just COVID, but that COVID thing with you saying, you know, obviously making debatable claims about the harm school closings were doing or whether they were even necessary. Because in Europe, they had different policies on schools than we had. What are we going to say? Everybody in Europe is wrong too? I was so,
yeah,
it seems
right.
Like, you know, there's no reason they should have come down on you as hard as they did.
Well, let me just say, it was the world that came down on me. San Francisco is an incredibly, quote unquote, progressive place. California schools were closed longer than any other state. Kids had more days out of school in virtual learning, which we now know those who were kept out the longest suffered the most egregious harms. I mean, the other horrible thing about all this is that the kids who are in public school in San Francisco, in any urban environment, these are often the kids that are the most vulnerable. There's homeless children. There's children living below the poverty line, certainly low-income children, no Wi-Fi at home, no adult to help them, you know, manage the learning. Everyone they claimed to be protecting, they were harming the most with these closures. But, you know, the citizens of San Francisco weren't having it. I lost my entire community in San Francisco. My friends, I still have fractured relationships with some family members. It was like, I don't know, you couldn't say it. You couldn't say what was so patently, obviously true. And what's so frustrating now, and I'm sure you feel the same way, there's all these headlines now in the New York Times, et cetera, the devastating harms of school closures, as if it's a big surprise and as if they didn't contribute to it. That's what makes me crazy, is the New York Times, CNN, these mainstream news outlets contributed. They furthered fear every step of the way, every step of the way. Kids were super spreaders. Kids were going to get MISC. Do you remember that? Do you remember that? Like,
yeah.
All the things. And, you know, long after adults had their lives back and could attend sporting events in stadiums with 60,000 people, two-year-olds were masked and kids were kept out of school. And so I was just, you know, I was not okay with that. And I was persistent in speaking up about it. And eventually I resigned from Levi's and have moved on to do my own thing. And, you know, I wish them all the best. I'm going to do my thing and I am going to say what I believe. And after 2 years, the last 2 years, so I've been consulting and I have interviewed some. So this is sort of interesting because I never wanted to start my own business. I know we're going to get that.
Yeah.
But I always liked working in a company. I don't know. I was a company person. You know, like I said, I'm sort of obedient. I didn't want to. Starting a company seems really hard. It is hard. I'll just be honest.
Yeah.
But as I went through interviews in the last 2 years, I just realized I couldn't go back into a corporate culture and be monitored at every turn, have my speech monitored. You know, I did an interview about a year ago at an $8 billion retailer, got all the way through the process. And the last person I talked to was one of the HR leaders. And she sort of grilled me about whether or not I was regretful and felt that I needed to apologize for my actions. And I said, absolutely not. I was right about everything.
Yeah.
And that was like a light bulb moment. Like, I can't go back into that environment, not to mention the sort of speech restrictions. But the other thing that happens when you come up in the corporate environment is you're just kind of like, I was sick of people telling me you're doing it wrong. You talk too fast. You don't know what women want. From men telling me I don't know what women are. Like, I'm done with that. I do know. I trust myself. I'm 55 years old. I'm really good at this. And I'm going to do it myself.
Well, let's go back for a minute. What would you say are some of the kinds of things you learned at Levi's about brand management and about corporate culture, either from a good standpoint or a bad one?
You know, there's a ton of good stuff. First of all, I mean, it's one of the most beloved brands in the world. It really is. It punches way above its weight class in that regard. You know, the size of the brand is not reflective. It ranks with brands like Nike and Apple, which are much bigger in terms of revenue. And it's a brand that tells stories. And I was certainly part of that, part of the resurgence. I mean, I led it as the chief marketing officer and helped lead us through a very successful IPO. And so I think I really learned how to tell stories about a brand that intersect with culture in a really meaningful way. And those are the very best brands, the most beloved brands. They're not just loved for product, but what they stand for. And, you know, I learned from the best. So I'm thrilled to be able to kind of take that and put it to use for something that I really care about, which is women's sports.
Okay, so let's talk about that. And then that'll give us an opportunity to talk about quite a few other things. So tell everybody about what, in fact, you're in New York right now. If I may say, you're actually in your hotel room here. So you are in New York promoting this,
yeah,
right?
You might see my bed behind me. It's New York hotel room, so it's tiny. So.
Yeah, it's a New York hotel. It barely has, the door opens and hits the bed, as it?
Yes, the toilet is basically right next to my bed.
Yeah, it's wild. People so dying to be there, they'll tolerate anything. I do the same thing. So describe for us your new company and what it's all about.
So I launched a new clothing brand this morning, today. It's called XXXY Athletics. And it is the first and only athletic brand to stand up for female athletes and the protection of women's sports. There's all these athletic brands out there, everyone from Nike to Lululemon to Rip Curl and everything in between. And not one, they all claim to stand up for women. They all claim to champion women. They all do big campaigns during Women's History Month, which is still going on right now and why we chose to launch this month. But not one will stand up for women and the protection of women's sports and spaces. And it's hypocritical. It's pathetic that they're not standing up for women. And I thought, I'm the perfect person to do this. I can do this. I can start a brand that makes amazing products, has a really resonant message, which, by the way, the vast majority of Americans agree with this message that Title IX needs to be protected. But most are just too afraid to say it because, you know, I know you get dragged across the internet and you get called a bigot and a transphobe. Well, I'm not a bigot because I care about opportunity for girls and women. And that's what really this is about. Because here's the thing, the ideological position that underpins all of this is that there is no difference between men and women. People will say it. They'll say, there's an article in The Atlantic just last year that, let's see if I can find the name of it. I'll find it and read it to you. It was 2 years ago, I think. Separating sports by sex doesn't make sense. Maintaining the binary in sports reinforces the idea that boys are bigger and stronger and faster, a notion that has been challenged for years. No, that is not a notion that has been challenged for years. It's utterly false. But everybody just nods along because they're afraid of being called names and they're forsaking women and girls in the process. And so I think brands can actually have a really positive influence on culture. You know, think about it. Nike made us all believe we were athletes. Dove furthered the body positivity movement. And so if I can kind of, through really elevated, emotional, resonant content, make this like normalize the idea of standing up for girls and women in sports, then I think it can really be a change maker. You know, we just want, I can't tell you how many texts I've gotten this morning from former athletes, gymnasts who are of the left, who all say, thank goodness somebody is doing this.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think there are a lot of people who would like to say something, but it's not in their nature to be contrarian. And this became the conventional wisdom so quickly that suddenly they are contrarians and this is not where they really like to be.
Totally. Yeah. It's like in the last 2 years, all of a sudden it's like not okay to say, no, girls and women's sports should be protected. It's insanity. It's so obvious. I don't need to be a doctor. I know what a woman is. I know that males are faster and stronger. And that is the reason that we have Title IX and the protection of sports and all the educational opportunities that that allows for. And I won't be quiet about it. I benefited from Title IX protections. I want my daughter, who is 7, to have that same opportunity.
Hey, everybody, Tom Woods here. And of course, you know, I've been talking a lot about monetary metals, which is a service for people smart enough to know they need to own some gold, but who also are ambitious enough to want to see that gold grow. And with monetary metals, you can earn interest on your gold paid in gold. And we have here a monetary metals client. David, why monetary metals? What value does it bring you?
Well, Tom, I started investing in gold probably about 7 or 8 years ago. And I was listening to your podcast. You had mentioned monetary metals. And I ran the numbers and I realized that the earnings or gains I could have had on that gold, not just in terms of earning more gold, but even looking at just the dollar value, was half of what it could have been. So by being able to earn that interest in gold on gold has allowed me to start maximizing my returns long term while also having the benefit of the safety net of earning gold, especially in such a high inflationary environment.
Well, David, that is exactly how I myself feel, which is why I also have an account at Monetary Metals. So find out more at monetary-metals.com/woods. That's monetary-metals.com/woods. What would you say to somebody who says, I am so sick and tired of politics being in every nook and cranny of society? They're in my, what ketchup I choose. They're in, you know, obviously in everywhere I turn on in entertainment. They're in the schools. Can't we just have companies stay out of politics? And maybe they would say, you're part of the problem.
They might, but here's what I would say back. This is not political. This is just truth. It's not left. It's not right. It's just the biological truth. Ruth Bader Ginsburg, a hero of the left, said that the physical differences between men and women are enduring. They are not fungible. They aren't. It's just true. This should not be partisan. So they can say I'm part of the problem. I would say I'm part of the solution.
Fair enough. So can I just ask you, just from a business standpoint, most people, now you have some benefit of having, you know, worked in apparel before, but most people would not even know where to begin starting an athletic apparel company, something like that. And I wouldn't even know where to start. What would the first step be?
Yeah.
What are the steps and how did you know how to navigate them?
Well, I didn't know how to do a startup. You know, I'll admit I worked, like I said, in an established company, but I do know how to build a brand. I know how to message a brand. I know how to make amazing product. I know how to build a team. So, you know, the first step was I actually met someone. I live in Denver now, and he was very interested in starting an apparel brand that appealed to those who felt kind of left out of the woke brand positions. They just felt like these brands weren't for them anymore. It felt at odds. They just wanted a great product that was aligned with truths and their beliefs. And so I met this guy and he was very interested in doing this. And at first I was like, no, I don't think I want to. I'm still trying to get a job. But then we kept talking more and more and I had an idea about what it could be. And I started to put, you know, a financial plan together. And then I started to put a team together. I mean, I can't design product. I'm not a designer. So I also knew, I knew the parts I knew how to do and I knew the parts I didn't know how to do. And I put a team together of great people. who know how to do the things I don't know how to do. And we got some investors and we were off to the races. I'm good at like knowing what the steps are and then being able to kind of put one foot in front of the other and get it all done. There's a lot of complexity to it, but I find it really fun. And it's just, you know, we're trying to build a culture. We like to say we take our mission seriously, but not ourselves. So we're trying to make it fun. Everybody has all kinds of different backgrounds and beliefs. And we're just committed to not being easily offended and challenging each other and, you know, creating a new culture that begets creativity and innovation.
Now that you've got it set up, what kind of a corporate culture do you want to foster within it?
I want to foster a culture of open debate and dissent. Like I said, I want to foster a culture where we're not easily offended. You know, people in corporate America, and I have so many friends that still work there, they tell me every day, I'm afraid to talk. I'm afraid there's a word I'm going to say that was maybe okay yesterday, but isn't okay today, and I'm going to get canceled. And I don't want to deal with any of that. Tom, if I could go and build this brand for years and never have HR, I would do it. I mean, honestly, HR is ruining corporate culture. It's like a nanny state, you know, policing your words. And how can you collaborate and create when you're afraid to talk? You can't do it. It's impossible. And I really believe it's a death knell for American innovation and leadership on the world stage if we can't just get rid of those behaviors, which are being inflicted on employee populations by overbearing, over large DEI groups within HR. So we're not going to have any of that.
I interviewed somebody on this show some time ago who had written a book called Death by HR. And just I thought that was one of the best book titles I'd heard in a long time.
That's amazing. I want to read it. That sounds really good. You know, it's interesting. I was in corporate America a long time, and I actually did work places other than Levi's, believe it or not. And I saw this transition over the last, you know, 20 to 30 years. You know, it used to be HR handled things like benefits and recruiting, and that was it. It was like a support function to make sure the employees were kind of cared for and that you recruited employees into open jobs. Now, it's this completely authoritarian, dictatorial organization monitoring everyone's words at every moment and doing trainings every 5 minutes. I don't want to do a training on sexual harassment every 5 minutes. I know how not to sexually harass somebody. I don't need a training after 5 minutes. I don't need DEI trainings every 5 minutes. I need to focus on the work and be respectful. I know how to be respectful. I can do it.
Right. Yeah. You don't have to treat me like I'm seven.
Right.
Or monitor everything I say and do and so on. So let's talk a little bit more though about what's going on in athletics as it intersects with the transgender controversy. You know, I don't see as much protest of what's been happening as I would expect to see. And I can't tell, is that because people are at peace with it or because they don't dare say anything?
They don't dare say anything.
But nothing changes if they don't say anything.
That's right. The latest Gallup poll, I believe, 70% of Americans agree with us, which is, you know, the vast majority, is still not as high as I would like it to be. And I think it would be higher if they felt comfortable saying true things, but people are really afraid. Look, fears of cancellation are real. We know that. And I'm not saying the fears are unwarranted, but again, I think people with common sense are the majority. And so if we stood together, we can't let ourselves be bullied by an ideological, very loud minority. We can't, because then we will accept living in lies. It's dangerous. You know, if I were to draw a comparison to, you know, the earlier example I used in gymnastics, which I know is very different, but we were bullied as young athletes into keeping silent when there were abusive coaches all around us. Kids were hurt because of that. Parents were bullied into being silent. Parents thought that if they spoke up, their kid wouldn't get picked for the team or wouldn't get, you know, it's a subjective sport. Well, when you're silent in the face of that kind of evil, children get hurt. And so you just can't do it. And so I just tell everybody, you got to screw up your courage. You got to take the names. They don't mean anything. None of it bothers me anymore. I'm sure it doesn't bother you either. Right. I really honestly don't care at all. I used to care and try to defend myself. Now I laugh at it because the names are just dumb.
And a name is not an argument. You know,
no.
Show me where I'm wrong. You can call me any name you want. But when you're done doing that, then show me where my mistake is.
That's right. Well, they don't. It's the purview of people with no argument. Yeah. Name calling is the purview of people with no argument. If they had an argument, and you know, some might argue, well, inclusivity matters more than fairness. No, it doesn't. No, it doesn't. They both matter. And we can be inclusive and we can create an open category, and that's fine. But fairness matters. The single biggest determinant of athletic performance is biological sex. Period.
And thing is, we all know that.
You know, I know.
For some reason, we're pretending not to know that.
Yeah. Allison Felix, who's I think she's the winningest track and field woman ever, American woman ever. In 2017, I believe it was 2017, she was like an Olympic gold medalist, world champion, all these things. That year, fastest woman in the world in her category, she was beat by 1,500 males in America, high school boys. She was the fastest woman in the world, and she wouldn't have made, you know, a state team.
Yeah,
so
see,
it's like crazy.
I'm trying to think of somebody, the kind of person who has this massive biological advantage and decides anyway, I'm going to participate in women's sports. I mean, I don't know if we've ever actually bothered to stop and think about what would have to be going through somebody's head to think that's a good idea or think, well, my rights trump everything. You know, that seems like a profoundly selfish and cruel and dumb thing to do, you know? And yet, it's happening all around us. And occasionally you get somebody speaking out about it, but
yeah, it's pretty narcissistic, I would argue. Pretty narcissistic.
Yes, narcissistic
is the... Why would you want to win in such an unfair fight?
Right.
Like, how could you consider yourself the best or the winner in such an unfair fight?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's not right. It's not safe either, I should say. You know, there's the fairness and then there's the safety issue. And there have been quite a few instances at this point in sports, and they're not just like full contact sports like boxing, which by the way, U.S. boxing has decided that trans identified male athletes can compete against women in boxing, which is like the worst possible sport. Like they're going to really get hurt. But even in other sports that have some contact, we have basketball, volleyball, kids have been hurt already. Young girls in high schools across the country have been really seriously injured. Very recently in a high school basketball game, I think in San Francisco, there were several trans-identified male athletes on a women's team. And the coach on the opposing team had to stop the game because his players were getting injured.
It's just, could you imagine thinking to yourself, I think I'll get in a boxing ring and start punching girls. I mean, I guess I just can't identify with this mentality. All right. So what exactly is the connection between your company and your concern for women's sports? Is it that you're going to, I just want to make this explicit. Are you going to donate to good causes or what's the connection?
Well, I mean, there's two things. First of all, it's the message. So we want to normalize saying, I stand up for women and girls. And I think you can do it. You know, I think, like I said, great brands are tools of culture. And they inform what we think, honestly. They're like art and music and all of these things. You know, Nike made us all believe we were athletes. Dove normalized body positivity. So brands can very much influence culture. So I think that alone is really important. If we put this message out there in a way that feels elevated, we can normalize it. And so people, women who are whispering to their friends in their kitchen will come out of their kitchen. They're going to come out of their closet and they're going to say, yeah, I stand with XXXY Athletics. But beyond that, we are partnering with an organization called ICONS, which its sole mission, it's a nonprofit, is to advocate for the protection of women's sports and spaces. We have a special edition t-shirt in our launch collection that is a collaboration with ICONS. The proceeds from that t-shirt will go to ICONS, and they're leading the lawsuit against the NCAA, of which Riley Gaines is a part of. So this will help fund that. And we're looking to partner with other organizations as well. And what I would love to do one day is actually start a fund for women athletes, because I think one thing that gets this to stop is if women refuse to compete in unfair circumstances. But most female athletes at this point are afraid to say anything because they're afraid they're going to get booted from their sport. I mean, there's a woman, April Hutchison, who's a powerlifter in Canada, who's been kicked out by the organization for saying it's not fair, or they're afraid they'll lose sponsorship dollars. I mean, you know, the surfer Bethany Hamilton, the woman who lost an arm when she was 13 in a shark attack, world champion surfer, she challenged the World Surf League policy on including trans athletes in the women's category. And suddenly, lo and behold, there was no more contract with Rip Curl. Exited the contract with 3 years left and six figures. Why? So I want to be able to, I'm not there yet because we're small, but yeah. I would love to start a fund to say, no, stand up and say it, and I will sponsor you.
Yeah, yeah. You know, the analogy here, it reminds me of there was a doctor in Canada who was being persecuted for saying the wrong thing about Canadian COVID policy. I mean, Canadian COVID policy, who wouldn't say something about it? And they were fining her $300,000. This is very recent.
Yes, and November cow.
Yes, right. Yes, right. And at the last minute, she'd raised about half the money, but they obviously didn't expect her to raise the money. They were just trying to destroy her.
Yeah.
Elon Musk jumped in and said, I'll pay the rest of it.
Yeah, you know,
so you're going to be on some scale.
I'm
you're
going to
be
do that. Elon Musk. I'm going to get there. I'm making that commitment right now here on your show. I haven't talked about it on the other shows I've done. I just need to get some sales under our belt so we can actually put a fund together. And I think there's some other folks that will join and contribute to the fund.
Yeah.
You know, others have talked about it publicly, people like Riley Haynes. And so I think we can put a little fund together and these women won't have to worry about losing their sponsorship dollars or their scholarships. I mean, there are, you know, high school athletes who are afraid that they will lose college scholarships for saying this.
It's just wild. Now, the website, I love your redirect, thetruthfits.com. I just went there, thetruthfits.com. So what I want to know is, obviously, I guess I can order things online, but are you hoping to get your clothing into physical stores?
Right now, we're going to start online.
Okay.
We're hoping to start building stores in a couple years. So we need, you know, some sales momentum.
Oh, stores, so you build your own stores.
That's what I would like to do. I mean, I'll be honest with you. I know all the retailers in America. I certainly have worked with them over the years. Obviously, Levi's is a huge wholesaler. I think most are going to be not so welcoming of this message. And there are some that will be, but most will not be. And I mean, the other thing is the wholesale business is challenging. You don't get to present your brand the way it deserves to be presented. If you can keep it pure and you can keep it in direct to consumer, as they call it in the biz, you have much more brand control. So that would be my ideal if I can do it.
Okay. Okay. Let's thank our sponsor, Federated Computer. I know my listeners sometimes better than they know themselves. And I know you care about data privacy and you're not particularly thrilled with the way big tech has been acting. Well, then maybe we ought to think about not using their free tools anymore. Oh, but they're free, you say. Yeah, well, so is the gruel you get in prison. The tools are free because they're harvesting your data, they're manipulating you, and that doesn't have to be. Federated Computer offers a full replacement for Google, Microsoft Office 365, Slack, Zoom, and more for people who care about privacy and not being treated like cattle. Everything is encrypted end-to-end and fully backed up daily. We're talking private email, file storage, team chat, WordPress hosting, CRM, help desk, email marketing tools, and more, all bundled up into one easy monthly subscription. You get unlimited users without your price going up and fantastic customer support from actual people, not bots. Their solutions are powered by open source software, so you can take your data wherever you like, whenever you like. Visit federated.computer/woods today for your free 30-day trial. So how about that? A company that thinks its job is to, you know, provide you with services instead of spying on you or shutting you up or manipulating you. Well, take your first step towards digital freedom. Visit www.federated.computer/woods today for your free 30-day trial. So what do you do to launch a new company, a new brand? I mean, you're in New York doing promotional activity, but what does that consist of? I mean, you're getting on my show, you're getting on a bunch of shows. I don't know what this even looks like.
Yeah, well, I mean, we had to make product first, so it's hard. And we did it really fast. It's been about 6 months since we started, maybe a little less. Usually a go-to-market, as they call it in the business, is about 12 months for apparel. So we got to market in about under 6 months. It's a very tight collection right now. It's cotton product. We made it all in Peru. But we have a new line coming. We'll have a new drop in about a month or two, which is, I think, what people are going to be really excited about, which is performance product. So leggings, bike shorts, performance fabrics for men and women. So if you visit the site now and the collection seems small. Show us your support. And I promise you, we're going to follow up really soon with a bunch more stuff. But the quality is best in class. I mean, that's the other thing I set out to do. There's a lot of what they call parallel economy brands starting up, or freedom economy brands. But a lot of them, the product's just not that great. It's like they have an idea, which is worthwhile. But you got to make great product or no one's going to come back a second time. So, you know, we've got a world-class designer. So to get back to your question, how do you launch? First, you got to make product. Then you got to make marketing content. So we've got some amazing videos, which you can find on my Twitter handle or on the XXXY Twitter handle and on Instagram. We have all kinds of beautiful photography. We have to build a website. You have to build a paid search strategy. You have all these things. There's a lot of steps. I'm sure I'm leaving some people out. You'd build a financial plan. You have to decide how much product you're going to make, how much you think you're going to sell. I'm proud to say on this first day, we have done our first week in sales on the first day. So,
oh, that is so tremendous to hear.
Pretty happy about that. Yeah.
That is absolutely great. Well, since I know you a bit, and of course I know about your background, I know the quality will be good, but I know exactly what you're talking about. Like there are, you know, there are libertarian movies that are just not that good, or they're Christian movies, but they're not that good. And they're resting much too much on the fact that, you know, we're this kind of ideological thing. So you're going to automatically support us, but I'm not going to automatically support you.
No, you know, it's funny. Ben Shapiro says facts don't care about your feelings. They do, actually. Like, we need to move people. The movies can't be bad.
Right.
Even if they're aligned with my views like that. I'm not going to watch it if it's bad and not entertaining. I'm not going to listen to the music if it's bad.
Right.
Like, I'm just not going to. And I'm not going to drink the beer or eat the whatever.
Yeah.
Or use the search engine or whatever the thing is. I don't know. I'm not. So, I mean, that's when I just sort of had an aha moment, because I had this idea for the brand. And I knew that I would be incredibly disciplined about making great and great marketing content. And somehow the right, or the, I don't even want to call it the right, they don't quite get it, that the content has to be good. And they're missing out, because culture informs the way people think, and brands are a tool of culture. And if you make a lot of garbage, you're just losing the hearts and minds of people. And so then these ideas get smuggled in through the schools, and the culture and the brands have already built the support, if you see what I mean. Right. So we need to counter that with great product, great movies, great music, great films. You're right. The films are terrible. The films from our team are not good.
Yeah, they're not good. I mean, we increasingly do have some good documentaries, but films that involve actors were not really quite there yet. And again, I understand the motivation. Like, these are people who feel like we want to be out there represented just like the other side. But
yeah,
you don't want to come out with a half-baked product, because then you give the impression, well, maybe the other side deserves its dominance if this is the competition. I don't want to leave them
right. When you watch a MyPillow commercial, you're like, it's not that great. Is that pillow really going to be good?
But works.
Know,
the way, sometimes, I will say, sometimes the clunky, ugly commercial occasionally outperforms the super sleek one. Like sometimes with Facebook ads, the somewhat clunky ad can occasionally outperform, on the grounds that it seems like a regular person made it. You think, okay, well, that's what I want. I want like mom and pop.
Sure.
You know?
Sure, there's some charm
doesn't always
in that.
Work.
No, there could be some charm in that. But I'll cite an example of a commercial. There's an ad, If You Let Me Play, that Nike made back in 1995. It's one of my favorites of all time. Like, I think the very best ads are like many movies. And it was this incredibly moving ad with portraits of young girls in black and white, interspersed with data and statistics about the benefits of young girls playing in sports. Better self-esteem, better body image, more likely to graduate from high school, less likely to get pregnant in high school. So it was sort of touting the benefits of participation for girls in sports. Ironically, now they can't, you know, find the courage to stand up and protect what they had advocated for. But I mean, that ad was culture making. And I believe in making great work. Nikes of the world, the Levi's of the world, they make these amazing ads that are really memorable little movies. And I want to make content that competes with that.
And now, just to clarify, you're making products both for men and women?
Yes. There's more women's. And the men's collection right now is very small, but there's more coming soon. So keep checking back if you check, and there's nothing for you right now. There's a lot more coming soon, but it's men's and women's, yes.
Okay. And the company, one more time, is?
xx-xyathletics.
Okay. And you can get there. There is a website just like that, just the way Jennifer said it. But I happen to like thetruthfits.com.
It's a little very, easier very to nice, remember. Yeah.
Very, very nice redirect.
Here's one of the shirts you can check out right here.
Oh, that's okay. Oh, how about that? Yeah. How about that? Excellent. All right. Well, I'll put the link in the description, of course, and at tomwoods.com/2471. Do you have any parting words for us? I mean, first of all, congratulations on getting a week's worth of sales in a day.
Yeah, I'm super excited. We're really encouraged. But yeah, go check it out. Show your support if you believe in protecting girls and women's sports. You know, get a t-shirt, normalize talking about this. There's a great logo tee with our XXXY logo on it. Wear it with pride to your girls' soccer game, because I think together we can do this, and you won't be alone if you kind of creep out of your kitchen and reveal what you really think. We'll stand with you.
Good. Great to hear. All right. So thetruthfits.com. Everybody go check that out. We all, you know, you could all find something that you like on there, and let's be part of this for Jennifer. Also for yourselves, because you're going to be very happy with what you get. And also just for this larger cause of genuine equity, by the way. You know, it's so funny
yes.
that these words they throw around, they always employ them to mean their opposites, but we mean the original definition, you know, that women should not be driven out of their own space.
And we shouldn't be told to be quiet.
Right.
I mean, isn't this what feminists told us? I mean, I am a feminist. I still am happy to claim that title. I don't feel like it's a dirty word. I was told that I deserved equality of opportunity and I shouldn't sit down and be quiet because men told me to, that I could, you know, hold my own. Well, I'm doing it now and I'm not going to be quiet. And I don't think we should tell girls and women to sit down and be quiet while their spaces are being invaded.
Makes sense to me. Yes, but apparently you are supposed to be quiet on things they're going to let you know. They'll keep you posted the things you're supposed to be quiet about.
Well, that's why people are just totally quiet, because you're like, when is it? I don't even know. Like,
right.
I'm going to say something that's going to get me in trouble. So I just should better not say anything. But you know what? When something is blatantly obvious and true, as biology exists, you need to stand up and say it.
Yeah. Enough's enough here. Okay, Jennifer, well, best of luck to you and congratulations on your success.
Thank you so much, Tom. Thanks for having me on so many times. It's a treat to talk to you every time.
Thank you. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.